Well, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Wednesday, the 6th of April, 2022. Our first item of business is the taking of the roll to establish a quorum. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Hornstein present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr present. Representative Bernardi.
Present.
Bernardi present. Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Elkins present. Representative Frederick.
Present.
Frederick present. Representative Hausman.
Present.
Hausman present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Kosnick present. Representative Mason. Representative Mason. Representative Murphy.
Present.
Murphy present. Representative Mason present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Nelson present. Representative Olson. Representative Olson. Representative Richardson.
Present.
Richardson present. Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson. Representative West.
Present.
West present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. Our next item of business is approval of the minutes from yesterday, Tuesday, April 5th. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the on the April 5th meeting.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. Hi, Representative Olson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to let you know that Mr. Olson is here as well.
Okay. Please note that for the record, Mr. Dodge.
Thank you.
Okay. Just a couple of announcements before we move into public testimony as we continue through Omnibus Week. We will be hearing public testimony today. A number of people have signed up ahead of time. There's also some written testimony for the committee's consideration. And then tomorrow from 1 to 5:30, we will be considering amendments in our markup process. And if necessary, if we need to go beyond 5:30, our staff will be getting in touch with us about a reconvening time. We still don't know, A, if we have to go late, and if we do, when we will be able to reconvene. But that is certainly a possibility. But at this point, we're meeting tomorrow from 1 to 5:30. All amendments have been will be posted. The deadline has passed, so what is posted will be our amendments agenda for tomorrow. And I also, ahead of time, want to thank everybody for coming to testify today. And with that, I will hand over the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Cagle, who will facilitate our public engagement discussion today. Thank you very much, members. And we will now consider public testimony on the Omnibus Transportation Finance and Policy Bill. Representative Cagle.
Chair Hornstein, members will take brief testimony from DPS and MnDOT and then pause for brief member questions. Then we'll take up additional testimony from the public. So first up, we have Deputy Commissioner O'Hearn, followed by Interim MnDOT Commissioner Nancy Dobenberger. Hoping I got that right.
Got it. I think you got it, Vice Chair Cagle.
Great. Thank you.
Yes.
So welcome to the committee, Deputy Commissioner. If you could just state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle, Chair Hornstein, members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Cassandra O'Hearn. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Thank you for letting me testify today on the Transportation Omnibus Bill. We're very thank you for funding both of DPS's deficiency requests. Deficiency requests are important because, of course, it indicates that we don't have sufficient funds in the current fiscal year. The State Patrol has a deficiency request for the Capital Security and DVS for vehicle service operations, which include the production and mailing of license plates and tabs. This bill provides also funding for the expanded eligibility circumstances for the public safety officer's survivor benefit. So these are for families of first responders who die in the line of duty, who can receive benefits that would, the expansion is to expand those for cancer and post-traumatic stress when those situations and conditions are linked to their public safety service. This bill also funds a very important increase for soft body armor program. There are not enough funds in the current fiscal year to fund all of the requests for soft body armor, and these are for local law enforcement agencies and officers when they purchase their you know, bulletproof vests. So it includes both for this fiscal year as well as funding ongoing. Both of those programs, I do want to just address an issue that's come up numerous times, is that both of those programs are in the transportation budget because that is where our fiscal and administrative services budget rests. Not that it otherwise would be there, but there is no similar appropriation to the Commissioner of Public Safety on the Public Safety Committee side. So this is where these have historically been for as long as I am aware of. Both of those programs sit on the Public Safety Transportation budget line. This bill includes two important updates for the Office of Pipeline Safety, and that is to allow language that increases the maximum fines. That isn't because we want to increase the fines. We've never reached those caps and don't continue to, but it is a requirement for under federal law. And so we receive negative comments when we're audited, and that puts federal funding at risk to not be consistent with the federal requirements. It also updates important reporting requirements so that utility companies also need to report damages to their lines, just like the pipeline companies do. Very importantly, this bill, and we thank this committee for the work on the Traffic Safety Advisory Council. This council is badly needed during this time when we have had a complete crisis on our roadways. This Traffic Safety Council will bring together all relevant stakeholders and provide the necessary focus, attention, and resources to increase safety along Minnesotans' roads. We thank you for the dollars that are in this, and those are helpful, but we'll note that it is a reduced amount from our request, and any increased funding is always beneficial. We know that there are a lot of competing priorities and understand that. The independent extra review conducted by Rick King and his team did an excellent job taking a look at both Deputy Registrar and DVS services, and we really appreciate their work and believe that many of the recommendations can have a big impact on how Minnesotans interact with driver and vehicle services, whether they are done at DVS or Deputy Registrars across the state. Our staff is, you know, always available to continue to work on language. Many of the recommendations from the independent expert review make sense, and we support them, and we can implement them. But one that we do have a concern with, and that is the issue of fee sharing. DPS believes deputy registrars deserve to be compensated fairly and compensated fairly for the work that they perform, all of the work that they perform. And this, you know, language in the bill does that by increasing filing fees. However, it also provides for the subsidization of state monies for private businesses and local government for work that deputy registrars are not doing, but is in fact done by the state agencies. And that is the online and mail-in services. The fee sharing model will drain state resources over $9.2 million annually, which will limit the amount and efficient services DVS can provide in future years. Again, deputy registrars should be paid fairly for the transactions they complete, but not the ones that they don't complete. One recommendation that is not currently in the bill that we do think is important is to look at the DVS deficiency in the future years. DVS fulfillment expenses for mail and online transaction should be funded from a direct appropriation based on the number of transactions that DVS completes. These are the online and mail-in, and the true cost of those fulfillments, rather than having to use their operation expenses as part of that general appropriation. That's the situation that we face ourselves in right now, and trying to address and make sure that this situation doesn't happen in the future. Some other DVS items that we're thankful for that are in this bill is the collection of race and ethnicity data, which we understand is very important not only for research purposes, but we've heard from community members that they want this information available so that people can really determine and use, again, for research, how race impacts various different activities with respect to crashes or law enforcement activity. The information is voluntary, and there are other states that currently do it. Security cameras at exam station hubs is really important. Unfortunately, we have seen more physical altercations at our exam stations, which is a safety issue not only for our staff, but for other members of the public that are waiting to be serviced as well. The funding also provides for security camera reimbursements for deputy registrars that either need to upgrade their equipment or don't have any equipment at all. It increases the data capacity, auditing capacity at DVS by additional staff to do that, because it is important that the data in Minnesota Drive is protected, and that only those with appropriate access are able to get that information. Want to thank you for funding the commercial vehicle enforcement efforts for the State Patrol. This allows the State Patrol to access newly available federal funds, which will increase school bus inspections, wait stations, roadside enforcement, and also provide proactive education. So we appreciate that. We will note, however, that this bill does not provide any funding for the State Patrol helicopter. Their oldest helicopter currently is 2005, which is old for aviation. And this is an important replacement to better serve the aviation facilities, and also reduces maintenance costs by around 35%. So it's safer and provides better information. There's a couple of policy provisions I want to highlight that are important in this bill, and those are the elimination of the license plate fee for all license plate fees for Cold Star families that supports those families. The ability to use internet as a consider it a utility document for real ID residency documentation for those seeking to get their real ID credentials, and then the use of school buses for emergency evacuation purposes. Many communities don't have other available transit to be able to do those evacuations. So the ability of school buses to be able to use in that manner when it's necessary is very important. As always, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, the department thanks you for your work. Look forward to continuing to work with you as this bill progresses. And with that, I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Next up, we have Interim Commissioner of MnDOT, Nancy Dottenberger.
You
welcome
got
to
it.
The committee. If you could state your name correctly for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dottenberger, and I am the Interim Commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Transportation. Joining me here from MnDOT is also John Dukic, our Manager for Legislative Affairs, and Josh Knatterud-Hubinger, our Chief Financial Officer. On behalf of MnDOT, we thank you for your work on the House Omnibus Transportation Bill and the opportunity to share MnDOT's perspective on it. We appreciate the bill's inclusion of several items from the governor's policy and budget proposals, including those related to Indian employment preference, North Star Bikeway, drones and the insurance requirements, turnbacks, state aid needs calculation, municipal screening board, reporting requirements for transit grant recipients, funding for small cities assistance, allowing the installation of electric vehicle charging infrastructure at certain rest areas, funding for the Northern Lights Express passenger rail line between Minneapolis and Duluth, operating funds for the second daily train to Chicago, funding for safe routes to school, $80 million in trunk highway bonds for high priority bridges, funding for the facilities capital improvement program, funding for the Allied Radio Matrix for Emergency Response, or ARMOR, as we call the acronym for radio communications, rail grade crossing safety funds, utility aircraft replacement, and funding for program delivery, as well as the federal funding appropriation in the state road construction program. We are also pleased to see the inclusion of policy changes to the Corridors of Commerce program, which provide clarification on how the program is to be administered. Delaying the solicitation to February 1st of 2023 is also appreciated, as it'll provide the agency time to successfully implement the proposed changes. The bill includes state matching funds to leverage federal funds provided by the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, IIJA. These funds will support the installation of electric vehicle charging infrastructure, county state aid highways, municipal state aid streets, multimodal transportation, and maximize federal transportation funding to combat climate change. The bill also includes additional operations and maintenance funding and agency services funding, as recommended by the governor, which are not eligible for federal funding. Unfortunately, the governor's proposal to use new ongoing trunk highway funding transferred from the state general fund is not included in the bill, although I understand there are discussions occurring in an effort to secure additional general fund resources for transportation. We appreciate the intent of the creation of the Highways for Habitat program, including the report due January 15th of 2025, but we do have some concerns about its administration. MnDOT manages multiple aspects of our highway rights-of-way, including an engineered road base and slopes to support the infrastructure, water infiltration, water conveyance, blowing snow control, survey markers and roadside weather stations, screening to and from adjacent land use, and the presence of protected species and other uses. So MnDOT is concerned that the Highway for Habitat program might restrict our ability to manage the right-of-way for these other needs by prioritizing creation of habitat. We are committed to working with the committee on this provision. While we recognize the intent of MnDOT assisting with federal grant applications related to IIJA, we do have suggestions on how to implement the federal funds local assistance program. In addition to conducting stakeholder engagement, we recommend that the funds for grant writing technical assistance be provided directly to the local agencies to help them hire a consultant to write their grant applications. We are committed to working with the committee and stakeholders to ensure successful implementation and administration of this program. Thank you for the opportunity to share MnDOT's perspectives on the omnibus transportation bill, and we look forward to working with you to address these issues as the bill progresses through the legislative process. My colleagues and I stand for questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right. Looks like we have some time. Does anybody have any brief questions for DPS or MnDOT? Not seeing any at the moment. Thank you very much for joining us. And with that, members, we'll move on to public testimony. And we will hold off questions on testifiers until the testimony is complete. To our testifiers, we have close to 20 who will be testifying today. So please keep your comments around 2 to 3 minutes and be prepared to please keep your comments to 2 to 3 minutes and be prepared to summarize testimony to ensure everyone gets a chance to speak. If you wish to submit written testimony in addition to your comments, please contact our committee administrator, Mr. Howe. So with that, we will move on to public testimony. First up is Ray Higgins, followed by Carolyn Beringer. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Higgins. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Ray Higgins, Minnesota Timber Producers Association, a trade association representing loggers, truckers, sawmills, and allied businesses in our state. I also speak on behalf of my colleague, Rick Horton, from Minnesota Forest Industries, who represents similar interests. And we'd like to thank Chair Hornstein and the committee for including the language from House File 3312 in the omnibus transportation bill. Language that would allow loggers to haul slightly wider loads of timber in northern Minnesota. We'd also like to thank Representative Rob Eklund for bringing this provision forward and helping loggers and sawmills in our state do business more economically. The language will make it easier for loggers to deliver harvested timber up to 112 inches in length on the equipment they already own to the small number of sawmills interested in this length. We appreciate also the opportunity to work with MnDOT, with the State Patrol, with Minnesota's counties and townships on this provision, and also thank the committee for their support of the forest products industry in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Carolyn Bergender from Drive Electric. Sorry if I butchered your name. And then on deck is Cap O'Rourke. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, and good afternoon, Chair Hornstein, Vice Chair Cagle, and members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Berninger. I'm a Transportation and Fuels Public Policy Manager at the Great Plains Institute, testifying today on behalf of Drive Electric Minnesota. Drive Electric Minnesota is a partnership of automakers, auto dealers, electric utilities and cooperatives, local and state government, corporations, and non-governmental organizations working to achieve electric vehicle adoption in Minnesota. We want to thank Chair Hornstein and committee members for including much needed investments in EV charging infrastructure and bus electrification in this package. Vehicle electrification is an important piece of Minnesota's decarbonization strategy and leads to reduced transportation costs, cleaner air, and energy independence. We have an unprecedented opportunity in front of us through the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act to invest in Minnesota's EV charging network. And making state funds available for the required match is the first step to ensuring Minnesotans see the full benefit of that funding. We appreciate the inclusion of this funding in the bill. Second, Drive Electric Minnesota supports funding for electric transit buses. Bus electrification will benefit communities throughout the state by reducing emissions and improving air quality, particularly in communities of color, communities with more low-income and uninsured residents, and more people living with disabilities. As we know, these groups often bear the brunt of transportation pollution impacts. Finally, we appreciate this committee's commitment to continuing the discussion around how all drivers contribute to the highway fund. We support a thoughtful analysis of a variety of road usage charge options and ultimately a comprehensive solution that's feasible, consistent, and fair for all Minnesotans. Again, thank you for including several important policy provisions related to vehicle electrification. We appreciate the opportunity to be here and to testify on the bill.
Thank you. All right, up next is Cap O'Rourke, followed by Matt Baumgartner. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Cap O'Rourke. I serve as the Executive Director of Minnesota Association of Small Cities. We represent the over 700 cities statewide that have populations with under 5,000. And as you are all aware, we are the only local entity that receives no dedicated funding to address our transportation needs. While we do appreciate the committee has included ongoing funding for small cities transportation in their current budget, we do have serious concerns about the level and lack of growth. In last year's House bill, that would have dedicated nearly $40 million per biennium in ongoing and growing revenue. The bill that was heard last week and was sent to taxes dedicated $24 million per biennium and also using a source that will increase over time. The current spreadsheet only has a $10 million per year static appropriation approach. This is simply not enough to address the needs of small cities, and we are concerned that a direct $10 million appropriation without any growth ongoing will actually hurt us in future legislative sessions. I do appreciate Chair Hornstein's ongoing support of Minnesota small cities transportation and our needs for a dedicated source. However, we do have concerns about the current bill. We will continue to work with the chair and the committee members to find ways that we can increase our funding into a method that also has a growth factor in ongoing years. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Next up, Matt Baumgartner, followed by Suzanne Sabatko. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee, and thank you for the time, Chair Hornstein. Additionally, I want to say a quick thank you to Representative Mary Murphy for her ongoing support of this and many other Duluth Area Chamber initiatives. My name is Matt Baumgartner, and I'm the president of the Duluth Area Chamber of Commerce. We are one of the largest chambers in the state and pride ourselves on our regional footprint, impact, and influence. Today, I'm here speaking in support of the inclusion of the Northern Lights Express Higher Speed Passenger Rail Project in House File 1683 Omnibus Transportation Supplemental Finance and Policy Bill. The numbers on this project add up to a substantial return on the state's investment. Out of Minnesota's over $9 billion budget surplus, the state would put $85 million on the table. If the U.S. Department of Transportation approves the project, the federal government would lay out $365 million. Moreover, early studies indicate the project could stimulate $2 billion in investments in the 155-mile corridor, and the income benefit associated with the NLX is conservatively estimated to be $11 billion over 30 years from the creation of 415,000 personal years of work, and property value benefits are estimated to be $2+ billion. Further, this project stands to become a pressure release valve for the workforce shortages created by housing and childcare limitations. Just think of how this rail line can connect workers in Duluth, Coon Rapids, Cambridge, Hinckley, and the Twin Cities. Additionally, this project would benefit our military veterans who need to travel from across northeastern Minnesota to visit the VA hospital in Minneapolis. With our chamber's strong military affairs committee, we urge your support. Finally, this is a game changer for students, seniors, sports fans, those with disabilities, and folks looking for a weekend or a night out in the Twin Cities or up in Duluth. Committee members, thank you for your time this afternoon, and I look forward to working with you again.
Thank you very much. Next up is Suzanne Sabatko, followed by Emily Murray. Welcome to the committee. Proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members. My name is Suzanne Sabatka, and I am the Policy and Research Director at Move Minnesota. Move Minnesota is one of the leading organizations of a coalition called Transportation Forward, which advocates for long-term and sustainable funding for our transit and active transportation infrastructure. I am so pleased to be here today to lend my support for House File 1683, which provides much needed investments in transit, biking, walking, and rolling. Over the past 2 years, we have talked a lot about uncertainty when it comes to our transit system. But we are hopefully seeing the light at the end of the tunnel of the COVID-19 pandemic, which means many more Minnesotans will need to make plans for how they will travel when they need to get to work, school, recreation, and all the other facets of daily life. At the same time, global economic pressures could soon drastically increase the cost of a gallon of gas. And when gas prices spike, historically, more Minnesotans have chosen to travel by bus and light rail. So there is urgency in addressing transit improvements right now. Some highlights in the bill I'd like to hold up in particular are the full IIJA matching funds for Metro Transit. Those dollars, combined with additional funds, will accelerate the build out of the fleet electric buses that will put us well on our way to successfully executing Metro Transit's recently released EV bus rollout plan. Further, we strongly support the temporary fare reduction provision that will motivate more Minnesotans to use transit this summer, and the formation of the Traffic Signal Prioritization Workgroup that will bring municipal and state partners together to think creatively about how local bus service, the workhorse of our transit system, can operate better. It is my understanding there is a requested correction to the appropriation for Greater Minnesota Transit in terms of the division of the amount of the one-time increase in appropriation combined with IIJA matching dollars. It's my hope we'll be able to work that out, and as the conversation continues, we'll be able to find ongoing funding for Greater Minnesota Transit IIJA matches. Finally, it is also my hope that a bill that was passed in committee last year and is currently on the General Register may be involved in this bill or be part of final negotiations, and that's the bill that establishes a civil penalty for fare non-payment and a transit ambassador program. These measures, which are used in transit systems across the country, would go a long way to improving transit safety and creating a fair and just system. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today, and I look forward to discussions in the coming weeks.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up is Emily Murray, followed by Sherry Munyon. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Murray. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Emily Murray with the Association of Minnesota Counties. On behalf of all 87 counties, I want to thank Chair Hornstein and members of the committee for your work on the DE amendment to House File 1683. We appreciate the bill's focus on providing match funding for the federal IIJA money, as well as the focus on traffic safety. As a statewide organization, AMC has long advocated for the need for increased transportation funding. It takes funding at the local, state, and federal level to meet the needs and demands on our local transportation system. We first want to offer our support for the $30 million one-time general fund appropriation to the County State Aid Highway Fund to serve as the state match for the federal IIJA funding. While this funding is greatly appreciated, local agencies will need a stable flow of state matching dollars over the next 5 years to maximize available federal funds. We also want to recognize the funding provided in the bill for the Federal Funds Local Assistance Program. We appreciate the language put forward by Vice Chair Cagle and look forward to working with you, MnDOT, and the other local agencies further on how the program would be administered. We also support the establishment and inclusion of the Traffic Safety Advisory Council and the money appropriated for these efforts. Thank you for including a representative from AMC on the council. We welcome the opportunity to work with all members of the council on the development and implementation of projects and programs intended to improve traffic safety on all Minnesota road systems. Lastly, counties want to thank you for the inclusion of the provisions put forward from the Driver and Vehicle Services Independent Expert Review in Article 4. We appreciate the amount of time and care that Dr. King and his team put into the report and for your attention to bringing these recommendations forward. On behalf of AMC, I want to thank Chair Hornstein and the committee for your work on this bill and for the opportunity to testify today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Up next is Sherry Munyon, followed by Margaret Donahoe. Ms. Munyon, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sherry Munyon. First, I will provide comments on behalf of the Citizens for Work Zone Safety. We were disheartened to see that the speed safety camera pilot project was not included in the omnibus bill. Speed safety cameras have proven to save lives in the 19 states where this is already in place. Sadly, after 4 years of advocacy and discussion, Minnesota is still behind in adopting this important public safety pilot project. Even sadder are the outrageous speeding statistics we heard from the Department of Public Safety and the State Patrol that are taking place in our work zones and other roads. And worse yet, the lack of progress comes after Minnesota families lost 502 people in road crashes this year. Remember, there's still time, and we urge you to do better for our road construction workers and the public and continue to looking for a way to bring this pilot project forward and not let a year go by with no progress. Now I'd like to speak on behalf of the Minnesota Public Transit Association. And first, Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the inclusion of the $10 million one-time appropriation from Representative Bolden's bill, which can be used for critical one-time spending that our local systems do not have the ability to meet within their current staffing and budget situations. First, just the assistance they will need to meet the increased fuel costs, and worse yet, the increases in buses that are taking place. We understand that buses already on order will be seeing a 30% increase in those vehicles. We are also hoping to provide bonuses for drivers, as with other organizations and agencies. This is an ongoing issue, and we have seen bonuses work in other areas and would like to incorporate that as well, together with the planning for transit facilities, shelters, and constructions. Thank you also for the appropriations to other important transit, biking, and walking projects in the state of Minnesota. However, we are quite concerned about the lack of critical state match to the IIJA grants for Greater Minnesota Transit Operations. The $7 million a year is going to be critical, and we hope that as you proceed through the process, you'll be able to include these operating funds. Members, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Munyon. Next up is Margaret Donahoe, followed by Jim Hirsch. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Donahoe. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Margaret Donahoe, Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on the House Transportation Omnibus Funding Bill. The member organizations of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance greatly appreciate the focus of the committee this year on both safety and accessing federal infrastructure funds. We share these priorities, and with a budget surplus of $9.25 billion in the general fund, we believe that more funding should be dedicated to these important priorities. As you know, the IIJA includes a five-year Surface Transportation Authorization Act. The funding will need to be accessed over 5 years at least. And if history is any indication, Congress may very well extend that act, as was done with both Safety Lou and the FAST Act, to at least 6 years or more. So we know that funding will be needed well into the future in order to position Minnesota to receive the maximum amount of federal funding possible. That is why we need stable, dedicated, ongoing revenue into the future. As you have heard from a number of groups, we were hoping that this would be done through the statutory dedication of the sales tax on auto repair parts. We feel it is very important to have that kind of stable, dedicated funding for this purpose. As has been mentioned, the governor's supplemental budget recommendations did include ongoing transfer of general fund dollars to match federal IIJA resources, over $300 million for the current biennium and over $400 million in the following biennium. With proposals for things like a gas tax holiday and no proposals to increase the traditional dedicated taxes and fees for transportation, there are very few options for ongoing revenue. Completing the dedication of the auto repair parts sales tax to transportation, we provide really a small fraction of the available general fund surplus to transportation. So we really hope that that can be added to this omnibus bill at some point in the future. I would like to thank Chair Hornstein and Representative Torkelson for including the corridors of commerce language in this bill. We believe that this program has played a key role in getting some important projects done and would like to see it continue in the future with a better process for selecting projects. We also appreciate the inclusion of the Traffic Safety Advisory Council to look at ways to improve safety on our roadways, and would echo the concerns about speed limit enforcement in work zones to keep our workers safe on the roadways. In conclusion, we urge you to make transportation funding a priority this session. It really does impact everybody, including how children get to school, how patients get to medical care, how workers get to jobs, and how products get to market. This session provides a real opportunity to make progress in improving safety and effectiveness on our transportation system through a partnership with federal, state, and local governments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Up next is Jim Hurst, followed by Natasha Chernevsky. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hurst. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to committee members. For the record, my name is Jim Hurst. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Deputy Registrars Association, and in the interest of time and to avoid duplicity, my comments can also be construed as reflecting the concerns and opinions of the Deputy Registrar Business Owners Association as well. Real briefly, I want to thank the committee for inclusion of Article 4 of the in the Delete All Amendment, which represents the findings of the Rick King report. And thank you to Representative Elkins for carrying that legislation as standalone legislation as well. Real briefly, this represents a critical thing that deputies have needed for some time. And it includes two critical components that is vital to our existence going forward, and that being a filing fee increase for driver's license transactions, which have not been addressed in over 10 years or modified in over 10 years. And certainly with the additional time that it takes for us to process Real ID and enhanced driver's license credentials, it is critical that those increases be enacted. In addition to that, it's also critical that the special full service fund to be delivered to deputies going forward is also critical. This is not a subsidy for deputy offices. Rather, it's a recognition of the workload that has been foisted onto our offices after the development that actually started with MnDrive, but continues, that started with MnLARS, but continues with MnDrive. And so it's appropriate that the deputy registrars are compensated for the hard work that they do. In the last year, we've already lost three offices permanently statewide, and that will only continue if action is not taken to stabilize offices going forward. In conclusion, I just want to say thank you again to you, Mr. Chair, and committee members, and we look forward to working with you, both MDRA and DRBOA, on this in the weeks going forward so that we finally have a conclusion and a sustainable model going forward. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Up next is Natasha Chernevsky. Hopefully I'm saying that right. Followed by Jeff Krueger. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was a valiant effort. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Natasha Chernyavsky, and I'm the Legislative and Policy Specialist for Citizens Council for Health Freedom. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. I would like to share three concerns that our organization has regarding Article 4, Section 17 of HF 1683, which requires a report on transitioning from physical to digital driver's license and vehicle documentation. First, our first concern is that the language in Article 4, Section 17 is essentially Representative Petersburg's bill, H.R. 4258, which never had a hearing over this session. Our second concern is that digital driver's license, which would serve as digital IDs, are powerful tools that can threaten individual freedom and privacy while increasing government surveillance over individual movements and purchases. This raises several questions, namely, would we, like the Chinese, eventually be required to have a smartphone to engage in public life, to drive, to fly, or to access medical care, with our every move being tracked? During the COVID pandemic, our government did not hesitate to track or trace citizens. Imagine the intrusions if the state-imposed digital ID could be accessed by officials. Our third concern is that the digital ID initiative is being pushed by the federal government and industry and international interests. According to the Homeland Security Today publication, the Science and Technology Directorate and National Institute of Standards and Technology and TSA are working together on a project to develop a framework for digital IDs. The publication states that the ultimate goal for state license issuers, like the Minnesota Department of Transportation, which requested this bill, is, quote, a digital identity ecosystem with standards developed by industry groups and international standards bodies, unquote. We do appreciate the changes proposed in the A22417 amendment. However, because of the concerns I listed above, we believe that the entirety of this language should not be incorporated into this omnibus bill, and we respectfully request that Article 4, Section 17 be stricken from HF 1683. I'm happy to answer any questions about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next up, Jeff Krueger, followed by MK Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jeff Krueger, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Townships. I represent the 1,780 townships that maintain over 55,000 miles of roads, which is 39% of all roads in Minnesota. Townships are where over 900,000 Minnesotans call home. I want to thank Representative Frederick and Representative Torkelson and the committee for including language in the DE1 amendment for townships to sit on MnDOT's LRIP advisory board. In 2021, townships had more applications than any other unit of local government, so we're happy to be able to have a voice that can influence which applications are granted funding in future LRIP appropriations. MATT remains neutral on the special forest products permit language in the DE1 amendment. We are concerned about the opportunity for abuse and overloading haulers and the potential for more township roads being damaged. This is one of the reasons why MATT supports adoption of a 7% dedication of auto parts and repairs sales tax to the township road account. 7% would equate to approximately $22 million for fiscal year 2023. Townships have been waiting 7 years since the TFAC recommendation came out, showing that townships needed a minimum of $15 million in additional funding just to help maintain existing roads. With inflation, that number has increased to over $20 million this year. A 7% dedication of auto parts and repairs sales tax finally gets us to that goal. Our state has a record surplus along with hundreds of millions in federal dollars that have poured into our state coffers. If there's a will, there's a way. I know we can find 20 plus million in additional ongoing funding for township roads. While MATT appreciates the proposed $4 million in one-time funding in the DE1 amendment, is woefully inadequate in helping townships maintain their current road infrastructure. For comparison, our Wisconsin neighbors maintain about 5,000 miles of town roads more than Minnesota townships do, and they will receive almost three times more state funding than Minnesota townships are expected to receive this year. My ask of you is to support dedicating 7% of auto parts and repairs sales tax for townships. We need 7% to be the floor and nothing lower. With inflation being as it is, construction this year is going to be a shock to our wallets, even worse than it usually is. My township board met last night, and my fellow supervisors and I agreed to hold off on any major road repairs this year due to the high cost of asphalt. We are so close to finally getting the ongoing dedicated funding that Minnesota townships so desperately need. The townships ask for your help. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you very much. Next up is MK Anderson, followed by Josh Fisher. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Anderson. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, and thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is MK Anderson, and I'm here today on behalf of Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a nearly 30-year-old nonpartisan nonprofit organization that is working to achieve equitable carbon neutral economies. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today regarding House File 1683. As of Monday, we've been given a now or never warning from the International Panel on Climate Change to dramatically reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. Global greenhouse gas emissions must peak by 2025 and rapidly fall in order to reach net zero emissions by 2050 to limit our warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. Warming over 1.5 degrees Celsius will cause irreversible damage to our communities, infrastructure, and ecosystems. In Minnesota and in the U.S., the transportation sector is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions. We must work quickly and diligently to zero out these emissions by rapidly deploying zero-emission vehicles where we can, building out a robust public and active transportation system, and reducing vehicle miles traveled by individual drivers. Chair Hornstein, we wanted to take this opportunity to thank you and highlight and thank you for including matching funds for the Federal Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act funding, specifically for transit system operations, zero emission buses, electric vehicle charging infrastructure, and other climate funding maximization. The Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act provides an unprecedented opportunity to invest in a clean transportation sector for our state, which all Minnesotans will benefit immensely from. Providing matching funds as proposed will allow the state to take full advantage of this funding. We also want to thank you for including Subdivision 7, allowing for the commercial development of electric vehicle infrastructure at certain rest stops, as well as for the creation of the Local Funds Assistance Program. Fresh Energy supports making sure that federal funds are able to be used by local entities, and we thank you for thinking not only of the funds, but of the implementation as well. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Up next is Josh Fisher, followed by Aurora Veturin. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fisher. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Josh Fisher here on behalf of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. We represent the automakers that produce about 99% of all the cars and light-duty trucks sold in the U.S. Rapid deployment of EV infrastructure is critically needed in Minnesota, and I want to thank the committee for including supportive policies in the bill that will encourage charging infrastructure build-out. Minnesota's current infrastructure is inadequate when compared to what's necessary to support the growing numbers of electric vehicles, and Minnesota residents need to be confident that they'll be able to charge or refuel their vehicle. Minnesota should expect to receive about $68 million from the Federal Infrastructure Act to support the expansion of an EV charging network in the state, and that's why it's critically important that the federal funding be fully utilized, and this bill provides those funds to match the federal grants provided for EV charging infrastructure. We fully support that. We also support the build-out of charging infrastructure at state rest areas. Providing Minnesota residents and tourists with EV charging provides a net benefit to the state. Charging stations at rest areas and other state properties will ensure that those residents and those visiting the state can charge their vehicles. We also support the creation of a road usage charge task force. Like every state, Minnesota must be confident or must confront the fiscal challenges of adequately funding an aging transportation system. The challenge is, what do you do about it? If Minnesota is ultimately chooses to go down this path, any charging pact needs to treat all vehicle owners fairly, and bringing stakeholders together to develop a plan is the right course of action now. There's no question that accessibility and visibility of EV chargers is a key aspect of an expanded nationwide network, and this bill will put Minnesota on the path to fulfilling its promises to develop a robust market for EVs. We encourage passage of these provisions and thank the committee for its consideration of our comments. Thanks.
Thank you. Next up, Aurora Veturin, followed by Steve Novak. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hello, my name is Aurora Veturin, and I'm the political director for the Minnesota 100% campaign. We are a cross-sector, statewide, multiracial, intersectional campaign to build equitable, clean energy futures for everyone in Minnesota. We have almost 60 organizational endorsers to date. I want to thank Chair Hornstein and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify today and for putting together this robust transportation omnibus bill. Our transportation system is how we stay connected as Minnesotans, but it's also the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in our state, and not all of us have equal access to it. This bill makes progress towards a clean and equitable future where more people have more access, and we won't have to choose between being connected and contributing to the climate crisis. We want to uplift the following provisions. The $10 million investment in Greater Minnesota Transit, which in addition to being an Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act match, meets the needs of Greater Minnesotans for more accessible transit. The $500,000 commitment for bus rapid transit planning for the JK and L lines, a critical need to make sure the system meets future rider demand. The $12.5 million investment in our state's active transportation program supports the walking and biking infrastructure that makes non-motorized transportation easier and safer for Minnesotans. The $51 million and $17 million funding to build the Northern Lights Express route from Minneapolis to Duluth, which connects two of Minnesota's largest communities. The $6.8 million and $3.4 million in investments in building out our electric vehicle infrastructure, and the $5 million to support Metro Transit's transition to a zero emissions bus fleet. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Steve Novak, followed by Shane Jart. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Novak. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Novak. I handle transportation issues for the Minnesota Intercounty Association. We represent four of the five suburban counties and 11 of the larger Greater Minnesota counties. And I would just briefly like to state that our number one priority is to continue to find additional funding for the county road and bridge system around Minnesota. And we appreciate the initial efforts in this bill to help us do that. Secondly, we, like some others who have testified, believe strongly that by the time the legislature leaves this year, we should put in place a funding system that will guarantee all of the appropriate matches for the new IIJA federal programs. And again, we appreciate the initial beginnings of that in this bill, and we hope by the time the process is over that we'll have a full match in place. Third, we, like some others, support the full transfer of the proceeds from the sales tax on auto parts. I take note that that is not in this bill, but I also understand and watched the hearing where it was put on as an amendment to Representative Hewitt's bill. It's not clear to me at this moment what the total strategy is, but it's clear to me that you probably have one. And I hope that by the time we're done, this all comes together and we can make progress in a number of areas here, including a discussion of how best to distribute those monies. In addition, we support your efforts to increase funding for Greater Minnesota Transit, and we support most, if not all, of your initiatives on traffic safety. I could go on, but I won't. I'll stop at this point. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Hornstein and the members of the committee for your work, and look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Next up is Shane Zart, followed by, that's it. You're the last on the list. I guess we're going alphabetical here. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Chair and members. My name is Shane Zart, and I'm with the firm Flaherty and Hood and testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, which is an organization that represents more than 110 member cities outside of the Twin Cities metro area. And first, want to comment on the city street funding in the bill and just say that we appreciate the additional funding that all cities would see under the bill, not only to help provide a match for federal dollars, but also provide ongoing support for city street maintenance. Now, I want to make special note of the inclusion of $10 million per year for small cities. that those funds are ongoing is great, and they'll help with potential federal matching. But of course, as some other testifiers mentioned, to make those funds even more impactful, it would be great. Of course, there are more dollars, but also through a source that would flow to small cities, be dedicated to small cities, and could grow naturally over time. We hope that's something we can continue to work on as session moves on. Also want to note just very briefly the provisions in the bill to support local governments with technical assistance in seeking federal grants. That kind of support, the lack of that kind of support, frankly, can be a barrier that prevents many, especially smaller cities, from being able to pursue those opportunities, and appreciate the inclusion of that. And on corridors of commerce, I think is the final thing I'll note. And I provided somewhat lengthy testimony, I believe, when Representative Torkelson's bill on that subject was in front of the committee. So for now, I'll just say thank you for including those provisions in the bill. Having had the opportunity since that hearing to continue to analyze that approach, we continue to feel it's an improvement over current law and seems to address a lot of the primary concerns of a number of stakeholders. And I'll reiterate one aspect of my testimony, which was a request for additional dollars to be allocated for an upcoming project selection round. Because those some of the programmatic changes proposed dividing dollars into three separate regions, of course, more dollars allocated to a project selection round can go a little farther, make the best use of those dollars, and get to more projects. That the department, I believe, noted the additional time that's provided in the bill before a project selection round needs to be initiated. I know that they know that's helpful for them. That's helpful for stakeholders, too, to provide additional time to understand and prepare for submission of those projects and what to expect from a new, hopefully improved program. So with that, thank you for the opportunity to testify, and happy to continue to work with members of the committee as things move forward this session.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I might have to hand the gavel back to you for a second so I can hop into workforce development and vote. So I will do that right now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, that concludes our public testimony. So at this point, unless there are any other comments or questions from the committee, we can adjourn a little bit early today, but with a reminder that we have a longer hearing tomorrow where we will discuss amendments and mark up the bill. So I'll just ask again if there's any other comments or questions from any committee members. Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned.